two MLU insiders.
Well, this is a brilliant game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing you hard analysis of everything that happens on the field.
They can play well when they're down by five.
This is the John and Greg Show.
This is John Phillips here with episode 8 of the John and Greg Show. And beside me, I have Craig Fallon, who is under 500 for the year.
I am. I think you're winning the Who Knows More About Ultimate challenge. At this point, I am currently 3-4 in my picks because I can't seem to get the Whitecaps right. They screwed me again this week. I was 1-3.
I went 2-2 because for whatever reason I put my faith into a Philadelphia team that has won one game, one of their last, what, at this point, 10 games?
Something
to that
lines.
Effect, which is...
I think 8 games. 9 games.
Because they had a 7-game losing streak before they won one at the end of last year.
It is 10 games.
Yeah,
exactly, so that's... 10 games. There you go.
So that's
hit it right on the money.
That's a 10-game season, which isn't pretty.
Where you're 1-9, that's not good.
But, you know...
team most of those games, though.
It's true. But even though you picked, you know, that Boston game wrong, wow. What a great weekend.
We did say that there was a chance. I think we're along the same lines as last week where we've got our thens right, but our ifs wrong.
Right.
We saw the current playing tight, and they did, and we saw it being a competitive game, which it was. We just saw the end working out a little bit different.
And it was tight, and we'll get into that and how, you know, DC executed that game plan. But it wasn't just in Boston.
Yeah, that kicked off a pretty crazy weekend across the league.
Right. You know, overtimes almost everywhere. It seemed, after that crazy DC game ended, then we get two overtime games on both coasts.
We get a double overtime game in Philly.
And then, you know, on Sunday, not a surprise in a Vancouver win, but still something that tells us a lot about both teams.
John, I got this one right.
Yo, you nailed it.
I didn't just get this game right. I got this game perfect.
And you got the deep shot.
I got my deep shot, yeah, that they would win by more than 10.
Right, which I was happy about. I was happy for you. So
I need some victories.
Yeah, Greg needs something. So, you know, we'll recap week two, and then we'll have on Morgan Hibbert, who was a big part of that victory over San Francisco.
Consistently an incredible defender, always coming up with highlight reel plays, and one of the best guys in the MLU to talk to. So just really excited to have him on the show today.
Yeah, it's always good to talk to Morgan. And then we'll break down the week three games, give you our headlines, our predictions.
Maybe we'll get some more of them right.
Let's hope so. But, you know, we'll start with, you know, kind of what I saw as the hammer heard around the world, you could say.
Yeah, I really liked Brian Flaherty's term for it, the Hail Mary hammer, which it every way was. I don't think when Peter released that, he thought it was going to be completed. If you didn't see the game, Peter Pryl, former Boston Whitecap, throws the stake into the hearts of his former team with a last-second desperation hammer in a tie game that was caught by Calvin Ong, who seemed to think he was going to catch it the whole time. But I thought the same thing. I had this idea when it was up there that somebody from DC was going to come down with it because it was coming kind of straight down into a crowd of, I don't know, probably 7 players.
Right.
And you're just thinking, like, well, these guys are pros, so somebody's probably going to catch it. Just what jersey are they going to be wearing when they're done with it? And it was Calvin Ong in his face when it looked like it took him a second to realize what he'd done. And then when he starts sprinting over to the sideline, and it was just a really cool moment. I was really, really happy to be at that game this weekend.
Yeah, it was an awesome moment. It kind of reminded me, the second went up, you know, I was watching at home, and it made me think of that week 10 catch from Kolick. Like, I had flashes of that. So I had a feeling someone from DC was going to bring it down.
Yeah.
And Ong, you know, I felt like he had it the whole way, too. It was interesting to watch.
The interesting thing about this incredible finish is, if you remember last year, week 2, same matchup, mm-hmm. same situation, except it was to tie the game. The DC Current had a huck from Markham Schaffner that was called back on a foul.
Right.
So they get another chance at it, and it floats harmlessly to the ground, and Boston wins. This time, complete opposite. It's a tie game. The foul gets called. Second chance goes up, and it's this amazing goal that ends Boston's 13-game winning streak.
It's one of those moments where you see the savvy of Peter Pryor to know that, you know, there are a lot of things that you can do in last-second situations to keep, you know, a good flick getting off, a good backhand getting off. But if you put a hammer up, if you can make it to the end zone, you get it there and see what happens.
If you look at the play, Lee Farnsworth is jumping up and down, basically doing jumping jacks, trying to keep him from throwing a hammer. The problem is he's like 3 yards behind it, 3 yards off of him.
Right.
So Peter's, it's like, I'm tall, I'm going to throw this. And, you know, it really was in the truest definition, a wounded duck hammer. I mean, it was kind of went straight up and then fell straight down for 40 feet, but fell straight down to the right spot.
Right. But, you know, the big question but prior to that was whether hammer should have even happened.
Let's get into the controversy here. Was it a foul? Was Markham Schaffner fouled? Now, originally, I didn't see the play live, but upon further review, when I got home and watched the game again, it's a foul. It's very clearly, you know, it's a tough foul. It's an unfortunate foul, but it is, you know, Brandon Malachek steps into Markham Schaffner's throwing space and catches his body. So he steps into his body, inhibits his throw, even though Schaffner is able to get the throw off. He's an incredible thrower. He's going to be able to throw with contact.
Right.
But it is a foul, and the disc rightly went back. And he can, you know, spout all he wants on Twitter about how it wasn't a foul, but it was a foul. You fouled him. They've been calling that play, they've been calling that foul for, you know, a year and 2 weeks now. So right. Get used to it. It's a foul.
I think that the interesting part of that is I think Schaffner kind of knew what was going to happen. He knew he could get it off, but I think he also knew that there was a chance that he was going to get fouled and, you know, get a redux if he doesn't get, you know,
a perfect throw off.
Right.
Rather than just take the chance, like, yeah, I hope I get the call in the 10 yards, he threw anyway, and that actually was almost completed as well.
It was. It wasn't a bad throw. I think that's one of the reasons why there's a little controversy, is just because of how, you know, he got a clean, like, almost a clean look off, but he was fouled. There was contact.
Yes.
That's a foul.
Absolutely.
That's a whistle.
So let's get into, I mean, we're going to run a little long on this game, but I think this game deserves it a little bit. Well, a lot.
It does.
Let's break down the anatomy of an upset here. I mean, we talked about wanting to do this segment for a while. Like, once Boston loses, how did it happen? Well, this is a brilliant game plan by Kevin Moldenhauer and the DC Current. We've said it a million times, Boston doesn't make mistakes.
Nope.
So what teams have tried to do is try to force them to make mistakes. It's not really working out for a lot of the teams in the Eastern Conference. So what DC says is, all right, we're going to, you know, play hard on your undercuts and force you to make throws that you think are, you know, high percentage throws. We're going to put discs up deep, and we're going to let our athletes go and, or well, DC says we're going to let our athletes go and get blocks. And Fleming on DC number 24, Ben Fleming, had a huge impact on those deep Ds. He didn't get his hands on too many, but I don't have the count for his actual number of Ds, but he's right in the area frustrating Danny Clark on a lot of these.
And it's hard to frustrate Danny Clark because he's a big dude who rules the skies in a lot of games.
But I think Kevin said, you know, if we get half of the 50-50 discs that go up, I think we have a chance to win the game. And they got probably like 70% of them, I'd say. I didn't take an official stat of that, but that's a bit. That's enough.
It's one of, you know, it's one of those things that one of the loves of Nick Darling's life is to poach off a defender on an in cut and then, you know, catch up at the last second, get that D on an in cut. Here, it's kind of the opposite. You know, you're saying like, yeah, we're going to make you think that you have that deep shot that against most teams you will, but our athletes are going to go get it. We're going to make you think that you don't need to throw that in cut. You're going to put it.
Yeah, they played hard on the unders. And, right. You know, they didn't get all. They got, you know, a few that they really needed to get later in the game, but they made those throws uncomfortable, which forced Boston to put it deep, which they didn't really want to do.
Right.
But against that defense, it's the right call. And they missed just enough of them. Now, the difficult thing about this this game plan is your offense has to play flawless to beat Boston. And the DC offense played about as good a game as you could have possibly had. I mean, Alan Kolick's dominance is incredible right now.
Yeah, he kind of encapsulates it. I believe
zero throwaways so far this season. He had 7 points in this game, 2 goals, 5 assists.
I think he's up to 99 throws on the year and without any turns.
He has one drop, but no throwaways.
Okay, so he has no throwaways, which kind of encapsulates not only his dominance, which is clear, but also what you need to do if you're going to beat a team like Boston. Yeah. And he played phenomenally well. It's kind of interesting to look at the top scorers from that game. You have Graham and Kolick splitting at 7 yeah. points each, and then Pryle and Clark.
How about Peter Pryle? The offense and defense.
The defense is what has really impressed me.
And let's just talk about the end here for a little bit, because you could find it easy to put the end of the game on Jeff Graham, the best player in the league, because he has that stall called on him, which sends DC I believe they either took the lead or tied it on that break.
Right.
And then he makes the throw. Oh, that was to get within one. And then he makes the throw the next point that is baited by David Boylan Colton for the D of the century for the current so far. Not the most impressive looking D, but the magnitude of it.
Right.
To get it back for the current, and then they punch it in and tie it, and then from there it was really just a matter of time, kind of. I think that actually was the point they put them up. I'm spacing on the specific scores, because I think Boston came back and tied it, and then DC right. had an offensive point with 30 seconds to go. Just an incredible game. But Graham also did so much to keep his team in the game, so I don't think you can really make him the GOAT.
Right.
But a bit of a struggle at the end.
And that's DC's goal, I'm sure. You can't play tough defense on Graham for an entire game. It's almost impossible. He's going to get his.
Yeah.
But late in it, if you force him into making a few not poor decisions. Jeff Graham doesn't make fully poor decisions, but into making plays that aren't up to his highest standard, then you give yourself a chance.
Yeah, you definitely do. And the last thing I want to say about this game is, as tough a loss it is for the Whitecaps, you kind of felt a sense of relief a little bit for them.
Yeah.
That, all right, we finally lost one. So now, maybe not that the target's gone, but you don't have to worry about, losing the winning streak anymore. It's right. You can just focus on playing and winning. And I think that's going to be good for them and good for the league. So I think they bounce back pretty nicely. Now, we got to get through the next few games quick.
Oh, no. Of course. We will easily be able to do this. Starting with a double overtime game.
Yeah. Another fantastic game.
Yeah. So Philly and New York up at the Eagles' Nest in...
Yeah. A really very strange ending in New York. In the second overtime, just an two unfortunate turns. First by Jack Marsh, throws one out of bounds.
Yeah.
And David Brandoff has a chance to punch it in for the win and nice hit into the ground. That's
the real killer.
That wasn't the first turnover he had in that corner either. He had another chance to win the game in the first overtime in that corner and missed it. But the huge difference in this game, I think, was New York looked a lot better for about 75% of the game, and a lot of that had to do with Isaac Saul and Robbie Gillies both had very, very good games after having pretty bad weeks. Isaac Saul, 7 points, 2 goals, 5 assists. Robbie Gillies, 5 goals. And I also liked that Jack Marsh was playing and he was dominant on offense.
Anthony Nunez learns quickly. And, he knew that something, had to change. Some pieces weren't necessarily clicking in week one. And, firstly getting those guys going, but also just moving Marsh around, moving the guys around just in general helped a lot.
Yeah, they really, really took it to Philly in the first half, specifically in the second quarter when they ran off 3 breaks in a row, one to end the first quarter and then 2 to start the second. And that was kind of the difference for the majority of the game. And then they hit that late third quarter. They just really, they were up 5 breaks at one point in this game and let Philly, get 4 unanswered, I think. Or something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, I think that Philadelphia has shown in the first two games that they can play well when they're down by five and they need to scramble to come back.
They're resilient, and they're a lot tougher of a team than they were last year, which is very evident. And I like the strategy. I don't want to say strategy because I'm not in love with the strategy yet, but their offensive system is more aggressive, which I like. They've dumped the weave, which is great.
Yeah.
They needed to do that. That was the first thing they needed to do. But they're missing on a lot of their deep shots, and also their defense in this game was atrocious until the third quarter. I don't think they started playing defense until the third quarter. I mean, the Rumble are just running unguarded down the field when they're on offense. There was no pressure at all. It was very easy for Saul and for Mazur and for all these guys on New York to just run the disc up the field and score. And you're not... You're out of this game unless New York collapses like they did late in the second half, where they started making those silly turnovers again. Drops, dumb throws, overthrows. And Philly was able to capitalize on that, which is something that they haven't done in the past, which is encouraging. They're taking advantage of their opponent's mistakes.
It is encouraging, but at the same time, you know, maybe DC makes, you know, a few turns as well if you're down late against them. But against Boston, that game plan won't work. It just, you can't let that happen. So they'll need to clean it up. But New York, I think that the three guys that you spoke of, Saul, Gillies, and Marsh, were impact players, and they should feel good.
Ben Faust also had an excellent game.
He did. I mean, I asked on Twitter who had more points, Mazur or Esser, and Mazur kind of responded by saying, like, look, there are a lot of guys on New York who deserve big ups. And he's absolutely right. You know, that was more for me settling, you know, whether my deep shot was right. But, you know, they have so many names that it's going to be different guys every week. But seeing Saul get involved in that,
that was huge.
Was really important.
Ed, just a quick word about Esser. Okay. That kid is exactly what Philly needs. I mean, he's...
Spark
the
plug.
Point number is pretty good. 6, 4 goals, 2 assists, but his real impact is when those 6 points come. I mean, he's the ultimate closer, the ultimate big play guy who they really, really need. He's kept them in some of these games
with
some big plays, and you know he's going to steal them one eventually. He almost stole them one this time.
He almost did, and it's good to see that Billy Maroon understands his importance.
Yes.
He's not just saying, like, man, this guy, you know, character-wise is a little different than a lot of the players on this team, you know, in terms of, you know, his energy, the electricity he brings. He's kind of owning that and letting Esser be Esser, which is nice to see.
He's got to let Alex Peters be Alex Peters a little bit more, because when that guy's on the field, he's very impactful.
He makes some throws.
I don't see him on the field as much as I think he should be.
No, and when he just makes some throws that he thinks about the field in a different way.
He does,
which is really great, and it's so different than his brother Eddie with DC.
Who's having a fantastic start to the season,
right? And they're and the Current are using him. Whereas
about the fifth best player on their O line, but their O line is so good, the four other guys ahead of him are taking great defenders away, and he's just able to use his athleticism to make great plays.
Right, and Peters honestly could do the same, because if you look at, you know, Rainwater, man, he's open under every time. Like, Philly has
He's been a little bit different of a player, and I think that's probably the way the defenses are keying on him. But man, would I like to see him going deep and getting over some people.
Yeah, he hasn't been doing that nearly as much, but just having him on that field, I think, gives a comfortability to those handlers.
Yeah.
Just knowing that he's there as a cutter that they can always rely on.
And last word about this game. I thought Chris Mazur was better. Obviously, didn't have as many costly turnovers. He did have the drop pull, which was not a positive for him. But I felt like he played better, but I'm still waiting for him to do what he did last year. And I don't expect him to... You know, with the talent on this team and the talent in the handling core, score as many points. But I think he had 2 points in this game, 3 points, 2 goals and an assist. I'm waiting for him to.
It's the assists the assists that are really missing. But those goals, if we talk about players that come up big, those goals came at big times.
Yeah, they did. I mean, this wasn't a bad game from him. it just what he didn't he wasn't as impactful as he can be.
Right.
And maybe that's them being less Mazer-centric, as we heard Dusty Rhodes talk about.
Right.
But I think being less Mazer-centric is not a great thing for them, especially going forward. I mean, you can get away with it against Philly, but when you get back up against DC and Boston,
you saw what Kolek had to do.
You got to let your best players play the best.
Yeah. So on the West Coast,
yeah, these we can kind of handle together, because it's really the weekend of the Dogfish, which was not positive.
No, it really wasn't. So San Francisco goes on the road, loses two games. One, a close one. One that was not close at all.
I think the Vancouver game, what I take from that mostly is, you know, Vancouver's very good. They were rested at home in front of a big crowd.
Right, they're family.
And, you know, San Francisco stayed with them in the first half. I think it was a 1 or 2 point game for most of the first half.
For most of it.
And then the second half, they just didn't have the legs, and Vancouver kind of stomped them. And we'll talk a little bit more about the impressive play of Vancouver later, and one rookie in Vancouver in particular. But let me get to this Seattle-San Francisco game real quick. This was an overtime game that was very exciting. But I didn't particularly think it was well played on either side.
No.
I think some people had good games. I think particularly Khalif El-Salam and Jimmy Choo had a really nice chemistry, especially for a very old player and a very young player. This was the best that Khalif El-Salam has ever played in the MLU, and he was impactful.
And so another guy who last year was on D a lot of the time, and who just, like, his numbers don't look great from his first year of playing. They're using him differently. In Seattle, they're using him differently, which is
I was somewhat impressed with the way that Seattle looked more like a team than they did in week 1. And I think part of that is no Wind, and part of that is no Mario.
Right.
Who
Mario was Brian, not good, the player coach.
He was not good in week 1. He was very bad. And I think with Adam Simon kind of having the offense run through him, it looked better. I still didn't think they looked particularly impressive, but I thought they looked better. They looked more like a team. And they, I don't want to say dismantled for large parts of the game, but they took advantage of Dogfish mistakes and built up a lead that was larger, or looked larger than it was. I think they never really got more than 2 to 3 breaks ahead,
right. Just
because of the way the quarters worked out and the way the breaks were timed. It got to, I think, 4 points, but it was really not... I don't think they really ever led by more than 3 breaks. And then San Francisco charges back in with a couple nice plays late. Corey Lee, who is the only MLU player to play in both conferences, by the way. Remember the New York Rumble last year? Interesting storyline there.
That's interesting.
Yeah. He played well, but this is a San Francisco team without a lot of its really strong players. No Drew Kim, no Tyler Grant, no Mac Taylor.
No Mac, yeah.
Predictably struggling on the road into 2 home openers with good crowds. I don't know what you take from it if you're San Francisco, except that Evan Boucher is one of the best players in the league. He had an amazing weekend.
Yeah, I think that San Francisco is and will be a little better than Seattle throughout the season. I think they're not better than Vancouver, even with those guys. It's
not
closer.
Right now. It's very clear right now that they're not.
And it, I think that had Mac been there, had Drew Kim been there, you know, closer, but still not there yet.
No, that was a really tough game. They were not really going to compete in that game with the, you know, back end of the road trip in Vancouver, home opener against a very good team. Just a rough game for them. And also, Dan Bellinger wasn't as good as he was in week 1.
Right, because he kind of had a breakout.
Very low impact. I don't think he played on Sunday. I think he may have been injured on Saturday. I'm not sure. But he wasn't as good as he was in their first game.
One more Seattle note, Tridiak.
Great game from Tridiak.
Was really good.
He's a key for them as a veteran. Adam Simon played a very good game. Adam Simon, what I've noticed is he's not a huge point guy.
No, but he's
He's a huge touches guy, and he's a huge, you know, he sets up so many goals with throws just short of the goal line. So his numbers aren't great, but he's having a very nice start to the season, I think.
Yeah, for sure. That's one guy in the league that it's not all about stats. Yeah.
Now let's get to the Vancouver Nighthawks, who won, as I predicted, by more than 10 points on Sunday in their home opener, which a great crowd, great fans in Vancouver.
And there were just two stats from this game that just are wild.
Yeah, let's start with the second one on our list.
Right.
22 different players of the active 25 tallied a point for Vancouver in this game. Now, they scored 25 goals, so that's 50 points to go around between 22 players, though. 22 players with at least one, and 10 of them belong to Brendan Wong, who is, without question, Rookie of the Year right now.
He had such a breakout performance. What was his
10 his points.
10 points. Were most of them...
was... I have it right here. On the other side of this paper. It was... I believe... Hang on. It was 7-3. It was 7 goals, 3 assists for Brendan Wong.
So not, you know, a Timmy person-esque just goal, 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 goal.
Yeah. I mean, he was incredible. And him teaming up with his fellow rookie Gagan Chatha was very fun to watch, who had 4 points. So, I mean, you give 10 of those points to Wong, that's 40 points to go between 21 players. It's incredible. There were only 3 players on the active roster that day who didn't tally a point. One of them, Takuya Saito.
Which is interesting, and we've talked about how... it's going to be a slow process for him.
It's been very slow so far. He hasn't really had too big of an impact, and we'll ask Morgan Hibbert about that coming up. But
we'll also ask about Brendan Wong.
We'll also ask about a guy we haven't talked about too much, Brendan Wong. It's a good win for Vancouver. It's a dominant win. It's what they should have done in that game, and that's something they're not accustomed to. They're not accustomed to winning games.
Handily,
the way that they're not accustomed to playing up to their potential, and I think this was a good step for them. It was an easy win, but they needed to make it look easy, and they did. And you know, now they have a nice springboard to go into the next few weeks. They have Seattle, and I think they have a bye week before playing Portland again in what could be, you know, a matchup of Western Conference elite right now. It looks like those are the two best teams. San Francisco, I still believe, is going to get better with a full roster. But right now, just looking at the footage, looking at the numbers, Portland and Vancouver seem to be the cream of the crop.
This weekend was a rough one for San Francisco. It's one that they hope they won't have to do it again, and they won't want to.
No.
That's for sure.
That's a tough road trip. They do have another back-to-back in a couple of weeks, but, you know, got to get a win in between. We'll see how they fare next weekend.
Yeah, they're growing. These young players, again, so much turnover on both San Francisco and Seattle's rosters.
And now, John, we have coming up our interview with Morgan Hibbert of the Vancouver Nighthawks.
So we're here with Morgan Hibbert of the Vancouver Nighthawks, one of the best defensive players in the league. Morgan, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you guys for calling.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show this week. We just got some questions for you about... Firstly, about your big win this weekend. I mean, you guys dismantled San Francisco in what was, we talked about it, it was a tough spot for them, second leg of a back-to-back with a lot of their best players out. Just walk us through that win and how it felt to finally beat the Dogfish and finally kind of play up to the level that you guys expect yourselves to play at.
It felt really good. You know, it felt good, first of all, to get a nice victory at home in front of the fans and give them something to cheer about. And yeah, we went 0-3 against the Dogfish last year, and until they lose, they're still the Western Conference champions in my mind, and they're still the team you compare yourselves to. And so to get a good victory over them, regardless of the circumstance, is really good positive momentum builder for the team.
So you were also out front, you know, of probably easily the best fans in the MLU, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
How good did it feel to be back in front of the, you know, that rabid fan base that you guys are building there?
It's awesome. You get so charged at the beginning when they're cheering for your name as you're getting introduced, and then they're cheering just throughout the whole game. Every single play, you hear the oohs and the ahs and the applause, and you know, you see the smiles on the kids' faces who want to come have photos with you and autographs and all that stuff, and it's cool. It just gives you so much energy. It gives you a big boost and definitely a home field advantage.
So one of the takeaways that we found watching through that game tape was the discovery that is Brandon Wong on your team.
Guy just seems to be everywhere, racked up 10 points this week, 7 points last week. Just talk to us a little bit about what he brings and, you know, if you guys saw this coming, because we certainly didn't.
Yeah, I'll answer the second part first, that we totally saw it coming. Brenda is he's a rookie in the MLU, but he's been around the Vancouver Ultimate scene for a number of years and has also played on Team Canada. So he played on Team Canada in 2008 and then again in 2012. And so he's been around for quite a while. Brendan and myself actually go back to competing against each other when we were both in high school. We got quite a long history with each other. And so this is not surprising to any of us. He's a very special talent, a very special player, and a fabulous teammate. And it's cool that the rest of the world and the MLU world is getting a chance to see his talents, and I expect it to continue.
I mean, it's interesting to see him racking up points, what with, you know, you have so many other big names on that offense.
Yeah, we counted 22 different players tallied a point in that game. A notable missing from that list was Takuya Saito, the big import from Japan. So what can you tell us about, first, the depth of your team, and then second, where Saito is in his integration and development?
So the depth of our team is definitely, I think, our strongest asset. We're able to roll 10, 11 deep on our offensive unit and 14, 15 deep on our defensive unit on a regular basis. It keeps our legs fresh. Everybody's able to interchange in the system without much of a difference. I mean, you're seeing Brendan Wong, his stats sort of explode at the moment, but really at any given day, it could be Matthew Berzan or Gagan Chata. You know, it's very interchangeable. And now, as far as Takuya goes, the role he plays doesn't always lead to stats for him. You know, he's playing on the defensive unit, and he's really sort of a middle of the field kind of guy. He threw a huck to me on Sunday, you know, and it created the goal essentially, but I caught it 5 yards out of the end zone. So then I'm throwing the assist to somebody else. However, the play was 100% created by Takuya. And so I don't think you're going to see him rack up the stats quite like other people. However, if you watch the game tape, you're going to be seeing that he's sort of got that hockey assist, you know, the second assist on a large number of occasions.
Which I always thought should count, John, just for the record.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean,
I've set up a number of those myself, so I feel his pain in that regard.
Right, especially being, you know, a defensive player who is like has that opportunity to set up those points.
Yeah, I mean, your chances are already limited, and then all of a sudden, you know, you throw one 5 yards short, and somebody else gets the credit.
Yeah, so him and myself, we talk after every practice, after every game on the sideline lots, and we're actually developing a very strong connection with each other, and I'm really starting to learn how to cut for what he likes. You know, he comes and tells me, oh, you know, do this instead, I have this throw and whatnot, and I feel very comfortable with him, and I would say he's very integrated into our offense already.
How do you feel about your defensive unit as a whole right now, and how they, you know, will need to, you know, play against what it looks like to be a really tough Portland team and two teams with a lot of young, you know, wild cards in San Francisco and Seattle?
I feel very average about our defensive unit at the moment. We were very poor against Portland. You know, we had a few highlight reel blocks, which makes it seem like your defense was good, but then we had a lot of really simple fundamental mistakes where we allowed Portland's offense to just run too easily. There was maybe one or two points only in the whole game where I thought we made them work. The rest of the time, it was pretty easy for them, or they just made a mistake, and that's how we got the turn. We were much better this weekend, for sure, but the opponent wasn't nearly as strong, given the reasons we sort of elaborated on earlier. So I feel better about our defensive unit, and I think we have a lot of athletes and a lot of capability. However, we need to keep working on our fundamentals and keep improving game to game. So this coming weekend will be a big test for us to see, okay, are we in fact improving and getting to a point where I'd be satisfied with it? And at the moment, I'd say we're nowhere near that.
You talked a little bit about the quality of the opponent you saw in Portland. Can you just speak to how they look improved from last year? Because we noticed, you know, a large difference in the way that they were playing, and particularly how they're going to look going forward with Timmy Person missing a few games.
Right. They look totally different. They look like they had a structure. You know, they still loved their deep shot, but it was much smarter. The way they ran their offense, it just looked like a unit of seven people working together. You know, Mark Burton's made a big impact on them. Really vocally, I noticed, like when I was covering him, throughout the point, he's barking orders at people, being a real field general and directing their offense and keeping things moving correctly. And, you know, their handlers with Jeremy Norden were very patient, very much a quarterback back there, running their offense, controlling the pace. And then some of their other guys, like Camden Allison Hall and whatnot, just carving up yards to over and over again. And they all fit. They all have these pieces that fit really well together, and they're playing really well together. Now, losing Timmy is going to be huge because he's a very important piece, and Timmy's so unique and special that you can't replace him, you know? So I think they're going to be fine. You know, they'll be able to adjust it, and they'll be able to still be a very good offense, but it won't be nearly the same because you just can't replace a Timmy. You know, the way he plays is so special and unique that it will be a challenge for them, but I don't think they'll be hurt that much because fundamentally they're very strong.
You talked about Mark Burton, who we know that you have a little bit of a history with. Can you talk about that relationship a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. It's a pretty short history, or rather it's sort of a newer history. I didn't really know about him too much until in the past year or so, and then especially when he blew up last year with the Rainmakers. And even then, you know, I thought sort of early on he was a byproduct of their system. While he's sort of clearly shown that was not the case, you know, he has his own unique set of talents. He's a really fun guy to play against. You know, we had some funny interactions during the game where, you know, I kind of got sort of mad at him when he kept catching those discs on me early on, you know, he understood, you know, it was out of respect. You know, I don't like getting scored on, and he was scoring on me. But it was really fun battling against him. We got to play really hard and compete, you know, and at the end of the game, you know, we got to shake each other's hands and sort of say, well done, you know, that was fun. And I love that kind of interaction you get with players sometimes, and it's just a joy to battle with him because I know he wants to beat me as badly as I want to beat him, and then afterwards we can be friends, but not during those 2 hours.
How much of an impact do you think that he had in bringing that structure to Portland?
Hard to say. You know, obviously I'm not on the inside there on what they do, and plus Portland has two new coaches this year who, right, I would assume have a strong influence, but from what I saw on the field and keeping things moving, keeping things calm, and I can say he brought a lot. You know, he definitely brought a lot of just this sort of an attitude. He brings a very good attitude. He doesn't panic. You know, he's keeping things calm and in control, which allows your offense to run when sometimes it's struggling. You know, and he can see his influence on the field during play.
Well, it certainly looks to be, you know, a matchup to watch going forward. You guys seem to have a lot of fun playing against each other and have one of those really great professional rivalries that I know I'm looking forward to watching, and I'm sure John is too, and hopefully all the fans out there are paying attention because it's, you know, you guys seem to be pretty well matched. So what exactly are your thoughts on the West going forward, particularly for your team and you know, also the conference as a whole, as you guys look ahead to your game next week against Seattle?
I think it's exciting. You know, one thing that's very clear after 2 weeks is there hasn't been a single road victory in the West yet. And I think that's a very telling stat. The travel on the West Coast is hard. Mm-hmm. I think teams have a very significant home field advantage. And the difference, I think, will be who is able to pull one out on the road. You know, who's able to get that key road victory. It's probably going to be the team who comes out on top. We definitely didn't see San Francisco at their best this past weekend. I expect a much tougher matchup from them. I haven't seen Seattle, but San Fran and Seattle have battled twice now in their two games, and both very hotly contested games. And so I expect that to be a real, real barn burner next week, and I'm really pumped for that, going down into Seattle, playing against them, renewing rivalries there. And then Portland, I don't think that was their best that we're going to see, you know, and they're only going to keep improving. It's going to be tough. You know, it's going to be really tough. I think, like I said, that who can play well away from home is going to be the deciding factor in the West this year.
It's an interesting take on it. I hadn't even noticed that until just now. But yeah, the travel in the West is very challenging.
It's harder than on the East Coast. You know, yeah. If Boston's the toughest, Boston to DC is your toughest trip.
Yeah, nobody's flying. Nobody has to fly.
Right.
Or cross a border.
Right, yeah. The border is tough.
All right, Morgan. Good luck next week against Seattle and going forward. I'm sure we expect a lot of highlight reel plays from you guys. And thanks for joining the show this week.
Thank you very much, and thank you guys for calling, and keep up the good work. I really am enjoying listening to your guys' podcast every week, as well as many other people I talk to, and it's quite a treat, so thank you guys for all the hard work you're doing.
Oh, no problem, Morgan. You're welcome.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks so much, Morgan. So we love having players like Morgan come onto the show and, you know, tell us what really is in their heads.
I think it's the most interesting part of our show for a listener. I mean, I love to do my analysis, but getting to hear the players' thoughts on things, I think, is probably the most interesting thing that we do. Why can't I say the word interesting today?
I don't know. You should just stop trying to be interesting, Greg.
It's probably because I'm not interesting. Oh, there, I can say it.
There, good job. So when you're being self-deprecating.
But in all seriousness, it's Morgan, great guy to talk to.
Good
that
insight.
That's a fun interview to do. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, so we'll move into our previews for the week, and we'll start off on the East Coast. We have two rematches of the games last week, so we'll start off with DC and Boston, and this is one that we both think is kind of an easy call.
Yeah, but I've been burned by Boston before. Although this is the first week, I don't think the game will be that close. I think a huge part of Boston's loss to DC was a long bus ride down to DC, and also missing a few key defensive players, Teddy Bruwer-Harris being one of them, Rusty Ingold-Smith, who shut down Chris Mazur in week one.
Huge
absentees that, I mean, we don't have the injury report yet. The injury report comes out Thursday. We record the show on Tuesday. But I expect them to be back, especially for a home game. I think Boston rolls. I think that bus ride up to Boston is tough on the current. And
tough to keep the current to keep their energy up.
Yeah. The D guys will probably be back, and I think Boston, you know, wins by five-ish. I have it at 23-18 in my prediction.
Yeah, I have 22-16, so even more of them.
Yeah, they're still the best team. DC got them, and it was a great game and well-deserved, but to play a perfect game like that again after a long bus ride with some better players back in the lineup, I think it's just too much for DC, especially at this point.
And that's not to say that DC isn't a team that can compete with Boston.
No, and I certainly think that they can, that Boston's not invincible at home, but I think DC, the trip is so far for them. I don't think that this is a good matchup for them.
I think that New York has a bit of a, if they get things together, they have a higher chance of beating Boston on Boston's home turf.
It's a shorter bus ride. It's the shortest bus ride of any Eastern Conference team up there. We just heard Morgan Hibbert talk about the difficult travel in the West, and getting to Boston is a tough road trip for everybody in the East, but the easiest for New York. I think it's only about three and a half hours.
Which isn't bad at all. So I'll start with my headline. You actually said it while you were just talking. which is funny. My headlines, it's simple. Still the best. Because, listen, Boston, at the end of the day, this is still the best team in the league. It's funny. I was filling out power rankings this morning, and I felt obligated to put DC first because they
I did too.
But
they have the best record.
They have the best record. So, like, it'd be kind of, like, mean of me to not put DC there. But, man, Boston's still the best team.
I agree. And my headline is home sweet home, Caps get revenge on the current. Very nice, short and sweet. I think the home field factor here is important.
Yeah.
Although, we have seen, you know, Morgan got me thinking about it. The DC Current are the only team in the MLU to win on the road so far. They won in Philly.
It's Philly, huh?
This is a tough venue, tough game.
I mean, honestly, the environment at Franklin Field, as much as I can make jokes about the spinners, that environment was tough.
This is a tough place to go play, and I think if any team is equipped to play well on the road, it's DC. They have athleticism, they have youth, they have excellent coaching staff.
It's just a much longer bus
ride. This is a tough ride, though. This one is not an easy road game, and I don't think they have too much of a chance. I don't think that's a problem for them at this point in the season.
So probably what could be seen as the most interesting game of the weekend, at least from our perspectives, because we don't really know too much about these teams, is Portland at San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Because we, since week one, have just wanted to see this Portland team again because we were so shocked by how well they played.
But there's a change now.
They're going down to San Francisco. And they are going to be missing Timmy Perston.
Which is, it's sad for me just because Timmy's the funniest person involved in the MLU. He's just a riot. If you have time, go look at his quotes from the article about his leaving to go to Ireland for work. They're hilarious, of course. But he'll be gone until we think like sometime in June. And so the Stags will be without him for a while, and I think
five games is what I heard.
And so it'll be really interesting to see what exactly this Stags team looks like, if that structure that they have can stay, you know, cemented without him.
The Stags are fortunate in that their schedule is backloaded.
It's so backloaded.
So they, you know, Timmy will miss less games than he would have if they had played a more front-heavy schedule the way San Francisco does.
And they also don't have to play Vancouver for a few weeks. They get San Francisco and Seattle a few times.
This is a tough road trip, and nobody in the West has won on the road yet. You know, this is a flight from Portland. I still like the Stags in the game, even without Timmy, because I don't have any clue what to make of San Francisco at this point. I think they're a much better team than the team that went on the road this weekend, but I don't know how much better. Portland just looks more complete. They look like they know what they're doing now. They're rested.
Yeah,
they didn't just play
Timmy.
A two-game weekend. I think the Stags win a close one here.
Yeah, I have 21-18 Stags.
I have 19-17.
I think that Portland will still be able to figure things out on O.
Yeah, I think Camden Allison Hall fills in that Timmy role of the second cutter to Mark Burton.
Right.
Or rather, Mark Burton slides up to Timmy, and then Camden slides up. And I think that they'll be fine in terms of their balance offensively.
Yeah. So my headline for this one is Gone Fishing.
No, I like that. I've been much less creative this week than I would like to be.
It's okay.
Stags continue strong start by holding off Fish in San Fran.
Yeah.
I also used Fish.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. I think
I had a rough Monday, John. It was a long day.
Oh, it's okay. Trust me.
Lots of work. Lots of work here at the MLU.
Trust me, I was not doing work here, but I was, you know, in various places saying, you know, and doing things that made it a very long day. So that was my Monday too. But yeah, I think that Portland's the better team right now. And
yeah,
but it's interesting. That game's interesting.
It definitely is. With the road trip, taking Timmy out of the equation, and just the way Portland played the first week and the way San Francisco played last weekend.
Yeah, so the other matchup out west.
We're into our live games this
week. Right, so these next two pieces of our podcast are about, you know, the two live stream games.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to see these right away, which is always fun. Vancouver at Seattle. Another one that you think will be...
I think this game will be close until the second half. I think this is much like the San Francisco game, except a little closer. And I think the Nighthawks are in control of the game. Maybe Seattle up by a point or two at different times, but I think that by the second half, if Seattle plays the way they did the last time they had a full roster,
right,
where they're playing their best guys absurd amounts of points, they'll be gassed. Ooh. The legs won't be there in the second half, and the extremely deep Nighthawks will assert their dominance. And I think after this weekend, all of the confidence issues in Vancouver, I think that's a thing of the past. They have to show they can win a tight game now, but I don't think this is the tight game. I think they pull away. I think they win by 6, 23-17.
Yeah, I have a little closer. I have 21-19, but that's mostly because I don't know what Seattle to expect. I think it's kind of safe to assume that we're going to see more of that week one look of a really tight, roster.
If they play their younger guys again.
If El Salam has another big game.
If El Salam plays that way. I think if they play the younger guys again, they have a good chance to at least stay competitive in the game. But again, we don't have the injury report. We don't know who's active this week. If it runs through Adam Simon, I think they have a better chance to win than if it runs through Mario. So, we'll have to wait and see for the injury report for that to become more clear. But I think this is the Hawks game either way. I think they're the better team.
Yeah, I do too. I think that Vancouver is definitely primed to be in the top two in the West pretty easily at this point. I wouldn't say
pretty easily. They still have to prove a lot to me. Just that they can win a tight game against a good team. A team that plays well. San Francisco was a good team that played bad and was missing a lot of its better players.
But it was still big that Vancouver was able to...
Yeah, it was big for them to, not play down to an opponent that was playing poorly. But I think they need to... That's the first thing they need to do. Then the second thing they need to do is win a tight game like they didn't win in Portland against a team that played very, very well.
Like, they didn't win in Portland and also what they didn't win last year. There were so many tight games.
They did beat Portland in a tight game, but I think they played down to Portland in that game. I think they let Portland hang around when that was a bad Portland team. This is a good Portland team. At least we think so.
We think.
And we'll learn more about the entire Western Conference this week. We have all four teams in action. And I think, we're going to learn a little bit about Seattle. They're playing at home against a quality opponent that we know is going to be ready. And Portland's playing on the road against a team that we think is good. But we're not, we don't know exactly what to make of them. We'll learn a lot this weekend. Now we move on to our East Coast game of the week, the game that I will be at.
I will also be there.
We will both be there. We'll both be at the same game for the first time this season.
That'll be fun.
For this.
I don't know what I'll be doing there, but I'll be there.
Yeah, well, I'll see you there.
I'll sit with you as you do your replay.
Yeah. This is a tough game to call because Philly's at home. New York has been a little shaky. And they played that third quarter that makes me scratch my head. I think that this is the week, though, where New York finally comes together. I think the third week together is the time when their roster...
That's one of the things we said kind of that it had to be around this time.
Yeah, if they take much longer. I mean, they've got the win. We said they had to go 1-2 in the first three. They're already at 1. If they can get to 2, that puts pressure on the rest of the conference, and it really puts Philly in a hole.
I think that this is the week that Philly is able to put everything together. I think that they win this game. I think New York...
You're going Philly.
Yeah, I'm going Philly.
Maybe I'll make up a game here on you.
Look, this is just one of those situations where I'm watching these guys play. Their offense, they're choosing the right looks.
New York was really able to make things difficult for them, though.
I think that it's less about what Philly's able to do on offense. I don't think that's necessarily the problem. New York is going to make life hard. But Philly was still able to put up points. Matt Esser playing, both O and D definitely helps. If Alex Peters gets a little more integrated into the offense, Ian McClellan, shout out to him. He's been playing, his throws, he looks like almost back to 100% from where he was a year ago.
I wasn't completely happy with the way Ian played.
What was
I wasn't really impressed. I think he's making some throws that are ill-advised, and you know, he makes this one kind of push passy throw that goes right into Marquez Brownlee's hand.
Oh, was that him who threw that?
Yeah, and
oh,
that's it's a questionable decision. And
I ended up just going on a 10-minute rant about push passes.
I just don't know if he's all the way back.
I think that on his hucks, though,
his hucks have looked good.
That's what I'm talking about.
There's definitely flashes of the player that he was before the injury. I think there's just some. I think he's just making some poor reads.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I am always excited when there's a player on the spinners who can put it deep consistently. That's why Alex Peters is another one that he needs to get more integrated, because his throws are, he sees the field differently than almost anyone else in the league, and it's fun to watch him throw.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, and in New York, I think that even though they played well, it's still tough. For them to, there's so many new guys. It'll be on the road this time. Beating the same team twice in 2 weeks is hard. We saw it with San Francisco and Seattle. So I think that amounts to a Philadelphia win.
I got the Rumble winning by 24-20.
Philadelphia winning by 3, so that's a 7-point. Geez. It's a 7-point difference.
One of us is going to have some bragging rights come next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my headline is Rumble play complete game and come together in Philly, because I think that they just, this is the week where everything comes together. They look like the team we thought they were going to be.
My headline's about damn time.
All right.
To the point. So that's it for our previews for the week, and we'll move, you know, towards the end of our show, and we'll get into our deep shots. And
yes, bold predictions.
And I think we were both correct on our deep shots last week?
Yes.
Oh.
This is a first. Oh. This is a first for our show.
Nice. I like that.
In all one right. attempt. A first in one attempt. So we're 1-for-1 on those. Or no, I'm sorry. We're 1-for-2.
We're 1-for-2. Yeah. Week one, we were both.
We both missed.
Yeah. So, do you want to start or I can go?
I will start. I think this is that Alan Kolick throws his first turnover this week in a dismantling in Boston. You can't keep this up. You can't keep up a streak of no throwaways when you touch the disc that much. It's not possible.
If Alan Kolick cared about stats, which I don't think that he does too much, because firstly, the dude touches the disc all the time. He can really, if he wants stats, he can go get stats.
He's getting them.
He's still getting them, but I don't think that he's necessarily, he puts the team on his back when he needs it. You know, if he was a different player, he'd just be like, man, I'm not going to throw a turn this game. We're waiting another week.
Just choose to not throw turnovers.
I'm just going to dump it every time. I'm not going to make any risky decisions. But that's not Alan Kolick. I think that this is a
that's
pretty...
That's what's been so amazing about this run he's on.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I think that it was Jonah Wisch for the spinners last year who went, like, 125 throws, which was impressive because he's 18, and, like, it was a big deal. But, like, Kolick, he is touching the disc all the time. Like this dude
sees
it.
Yeah, he's throwing deep.
Right, it's crazy. It's really
impressive.
It's an
impressive streak, and I think it comes to an end this week. Your deep shot, John.
Yeah, so mine is that this is a little long term, so I won't be able to be proven wrong next week. Well, maybe I will.
Well, you could.
I could be. But I think the Portland sweeps the Seattle series. I think that there's a little bit. There's so much tension. You know,
they don't like each other.
They really don't. And so I think that right now Portland has a better team. And so I think that Portland is going to enjoy kind of sticking it to a Seattle squad that's going to struggle. And so I think
that would be a fun thing to see.
So I think that they could pull out 3 wins. I think it'd be interesting.
They're going to need to if they want to make a run at the playoffs like you've predicted. And I'm coming around to your end pretty quickly on them. Although, it's one game.
It is one game. That's why this week is so important.
This is definitely the week where we're going to learn a lot about everybody.
Yeah,
San Francisco will be 4 games in, almost halfway through their season,
which is scary for them.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Unless they get a win, Philly will have played every team. Not every team.
Still waiting for Boston.
No, yeah, the Eastern Conference will not have played all the way around. Vancouver will have played every team. Vancouver will have played every team.
Right.
The West will have made its rounds except for Portland.
Right. So we'll learn more about the West, which is really what we need to know more about anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the East, pretty much we can see some sort of hierarchy forming, with Boston, New York, Boston, sorry, D.C., then New York, then Philly, until proven otherwise.
Yes.
And we'll see if this week it can change that up a little bit.
The long-term picture becomes clearer this week, John. And then we, you know, Dusty Rhodes, who's been doing a great job with his column, divides the season into three segments, the 3-4-3.
Right.
Well, after this week, we'll have started the middle stretch, the four.
Which is a
very big stretch where you keep yourself in the race.
You know, for a film reference, right? Talking about, you know, plot structure. We're in Act Two, right?
We'll be in Act Two. It's crazy to think a couple weeks ago we were not started, and now we're almost in Act Two of the season.
Yeah.
It's so incredible.
Teams will hang around. Some lives are going to end here as we go forward, but we'll finally learn a little bit more this week.
Good show, John.
Yeah, no, you know, good to talk to Morgan. It was exciting.
Always great.
Enjoy the games this weekend. Thanks so much for listening.
And let us know who you want us to talk to next week.
Yeah,
I think we try to have players on every week. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, and so, you know, someone, you know, maybe who we haven't talked to before. I think that'd be interesting. So that's it. As always, on Twitter, reach out to us or Facebook, shoot us an email. We're all over the place. We're trying to be. So, yeah, this is a good show. Looking forward to the games this weekend.
Yeah, this should be no travel this week for us, John.
We
get to stay at home and
so nice,
and just drive to the game at our own pace.
Right.
Looking forward to that.
Which will be great. So,
all right.
Yeah, so for everyone here at the MLU, I'm John Phillips.
I'm Greg Fallon. Thanks for listening.